Stocks. Jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now.
Like a cell phone or a regular computer processor now. Supposedly. We don't know.
This isn't good. I mean, it's a... I got the VIX up almost 7.
Yeah, that's the real... I mean, they're scared.
I just did a VIX spread for some people the other day, and for the first time in probably years. It's got to be a winner this morning.
Yeah.
I haven't seen this kind of a move in quite a while. Getting Amazon down almost 10 bucks. The NVIDIA's down 16. That's 11%.
Well, whatever we're down in the public markets, just multiply it by about 10, and that's how scared the private markets are.
What do you mean by private and public?
So, like, all the VC and PE guys who decided to dive headfirst into all the AI assistants and ChatGPT and all those things because they have, I don't know, it's sophisticated players like Mark Andreessen and other, like, tech VCs and leaders. You know, they were fooling around with DeepSeek, I guess, last week and over the weekend in places like Twitter. They were just
saying... Is that the name for that thing, DeepSeek?
DeepSeek AI Assistant. I think it went to number one in the App Store. And, yeah.
No, we don't have any problem with that being here.
So it was DeepSeek.
What does that thing actually do? All right, just for everybody...
So those are one, two.
Just for the listeners, what exactly does it do?
Call it Chinese ChatGPT. Now the
issues that ChatGPT do for people who never used it.
ChatGPT is like Google times like squared. So you can ask it things. It can talk back to you. It can explain things. It can help kids with homework. It can do administrative tasks in an office. It can format things. And if you connect it to the internet, it can look up things. So like, it's essentially at like an intern level. You've got an additional intern for $30 a month or $20 a month.
So you just tell it what to do and it does it, sort of.
Yeah. In a computer context, you can tell it to compose emails. You can tell it to analyze data. You can tell it to program. That's a big one. You can tell it to write, you know, Python or some of the JavaScript. And it can teach itself stuff, too. So, I mean, this DeepSeek thing is just the Chinese version of that. And the interesting part is it's open source. So it's not where there still may be bugs, I don't know, written in. It would be a lot harder to do if something is open source. So it's free. And
well, why would it be free?
Because the compute is down to a level where you can do it yourself.
All right, so suppose I want this. What do I do?
You go to the App Store. You go to whatever the Google Store is, and you type in DeepSeek, just one word, and it'll come under, like, it'll look like a whale icon and say Intelligent AI Assistant.
And how much is that?
Oh, it's free. That's why...
I mean, nothing's free. I mean,
right.
How do you guys get paid or something?
It's open source. I don't think that's the primary... open source means all the code is out there for everyone to edit and or not update, but improve upon.
So why would somebody give that to somebody without getting something? Are the Chinese government getting all we're doing or what?
Maybe it's some kind of Trojan horse. OpenAI started out as a... I don't know if it was open source, but it was definitely... a not-for-profit and supposedly for the good of the world. And I'm sure that's what Elon and Sam Altman are fighting about still.
I don't think Elon's ever done anything for free, has he?
I think the rationale behind some of OpenAI, at least to begin with, was this is going to happen. We need to figure out how to do it and how to make sure we don't fall behind. It was kind of like a space race type thing, you know, in their heads.
How China's new AI model DeepSeek is threatening U.S. dominance.
Yeah, because the U.S. companies, Microsoft, you know, Microsoft bought OpenAI for, I don't know, They sunk a bunch of money. I think it was
around $25
Yeah, $9 or $10 billion of cash into there to get like 51% or whatever it was. And yeah, they're spending a lot of money on trying to make sure there's the capacity for these data centers, for this, for the power, for the compute power, because I think they're still losing money considering how much people are using ChatGPT. I think they're losing money on it. And all of a sudden, this other program essentially lets you do most of that for...
Well, this is an article here by Jasmine Wu and Deirdre Bosa. I think I've seen her in the TV part. She's pretty good. A little-known AI lab out of China has ignited panic throughout Silicon Valley after releasing AI models that can outperform America's best, despite being built more cheaply with less powerful chips.
Right.
Which is what you're saying. DeepSeek, as a lab is called, unveiled a free open-source large language, whatever that means, large language model, late December that says it took only two months and less than $6 million to build. How can that be?
Exactly. That's why everybody was kind of freaking out.
Using reduced capacity chips from NVIDIA called H800. What are those? They can't be their highest.
Much cheaper.
The new developments have raised alarms on whether America's global lead in artificial intelligence is shrinking and called into question big tech's massive spend on building AI models and data centers, because they did it a hell of a lot cheaper, it appears. In a set of third-party benchmark tests, DeepSeek's model outperformed Meta's Llama 3.1, OpenAI GPT-40, Anthropic's Claude Sonnet 3.5, what is that? An accuracy ranging from complex problem-solving to math and coding. What did better?
So right now, in the if you look at the AI, you know, world, OpenAI is far along. Twitter is trying to get there with Grok. Meta has one, and then Anthropic, like you're saying, OpenAI and Anthropic, I think are considered, you know, the standard for at least the ones here. So
to see DeepSeek new model, it's super impressive in terms of both how they have really effectively done an open source model that does this inference time compute, whatever that means, and is super compute efficient. We should take the developments out of China very, very seriously. This is Microsoft Sade Nadella.
Yeah, he's the one who spent the $9 billion in cash on.
He sent that last Wednesday.
Yeah, then
so why are we going down on Monday?
And this is into speculation, obviously, but I think part of that big press conference that Trump had with Masayoshi Son or those guys, you know, Altman, announcing $500 billion or whatever into AI, you know, I got to believe that was because they knew already that this was going to be a large problem, and well, they didn't want to fall behind.
This is kind of freaky.
Maybe that's another huge waste of money by the government. We don't know.
DeepSeek also had to navigate the strict semiconductor restrictions that the U.S. government has imposed on China, cutting the country off from access to the most powerful chips, like NVIDIA's H100s.
Right.
The latest development suggests DeepSeek either found a way to work around the rules, or that the export controls were not the chokehold Washington intended. Go figure.
Yeah, and we got to keep in mind that that it could be a front for something. You know, it's a foreign... It's very possible that, similar to something like, you know, Amazon had their stores just with people in another country watching, and supposedly it was all automated, but it really wasn't. We don't know.
They can take a really good big model and use a process called distillation. Now, the process you know is distillation is to get booze. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Said benchmark general partner Chetan Pudigunta. Who the hell is that guy? Basically, use a very large model to help your small model get smart at the thing you want it to get smart at. It's actually very cost efficient. Are you understanding any of this? I'm kind of...
So, back in the day,
as lost as I am.
This is kind of like a compute breakthrough, meaning back in the day, we couldn't play, call it like a video game or the first-person shooters like you see now, because when you would move around, the computer has to render and figure out kind of what you're looking at and how to present it to you. It would just require too much computing power. And so instead of... This is the guy who did it, his name is John Carmack, and he was the original inventor or creator, I believe. I don't know what his official title, but he owned the company, and it was id Software. And what they did was they made it possible to run video games on like a personal computer, because they estimated it was a way of giving your chip a break. So instead of calculating down to the nearest the hundredths and thousandths, and they have to calculate all these things to estimate kind of the graphics, well, they just gave it an equation that kind of moved it along. It said, this is good enough, keep going. And so that way you were able to update, and that kind of kicked off a whole new genre of personal computing and games. And it was a way for the computer to be way more efficient. And this seems to be like that for AI.
Little is known about the lab and its founder, Lang Wenfeng. DeepSeek was born of a Chinese hedge fund called High Flyer Quant. It manages about $8 billion in assets, according to media reports.
Yeah, well, $8 billion in assets is now
a lot more.
Unlimited, yeah.
And it says, but DeepSeek is the only Chinese company making inroads. Leading AI researcher Kai-Fu Lee has said his startup, AI, O1-AI, was trained using only $3 million. The TikTok parent ByteDance on Wednesday released an update to its model that claims to outperform OpenAI's O1 in a key benchmark test.
Ah, so I found what I'm comparing it to. It's called the fast inverse square root. So instead of calculating everything down to the nearest decimals and rendering out your entire picture every single frame, this was a rule that they gave the computer in order to be able to present to you the screen much faster and smoother. So in AI now, the computer was doing all these calculations, you know, one by one by one by one, and now I think it has some kind of more efficient process to go through all the calculations it wants to while still maintaining accuracy. So,
interesting. When we first started in the business, or I first started, this might have been before Greg, I don't know, the guy who put the big leap forward in people have been able to model options and stuff, it was a guy named Steve Schwartz. Before that, actually, you know, Steve Schwartz was in one of my classes at the University of Chicago. The guy was a lot older than me. He was still taking classes there in the economics department. Character. But before then, everything came off tell me what I'm saying wrong here. Everything came off a main server. So if you sat down at a Montchek Weber, which was a machine, and tried to figure out model options, that's why I used to get here at 6:45 in the morning, even before, you know, long before I did a show. Because when you sat down, you could go pretty fast. And as soon as you sat down next to me, I mean, there might have been 15 of these things in the room, mine would get appreciably slower. And when they were full up, you got like you could check a stock maybe every 5 minutes, let alone every, you know, instead of every 5 seconds. And what Steve Schwartz did was take the feed, and all the calculations were done on the machine. So if somebody sat down next to you, it was their own. What do they call them in those days? They weren't exactly a PC, but they were. They looked like a computer, like now, although you had the bigger monitor, but they weren't really. They weren't really a PC. What do they used to call those things? The workstations or something? I don't know. But
like the mainframes, the servers.
No. This was when after you went from mainframes, it actually must have been a desktop of some kind, a preliminary desktop, and but he would have his math in there was so exact that he had a shortcut because the kid couldn't do all the calculations.
Yeah, that's exactly what this is.
So if you sat there and you looked at IBM, it'll say, okay, IBM's 222, so it'll be, you know, like the 220 calls, it would tell you the implied volatility was X. And it would tell you, you know, whatever you put your model in, and you say, I think IBM should be at a 17. So your fair value, all your options would be at a 17 volatility, would tell you the value, but then the option might be trading for, you know, obviously a different price, and it would tell you what the volatility, implied volatility was at the price it was. Or you could hit another button where it would actually get down to brass tacks and really dig into the math where everything is like four places. But it would take the machine like, you know, 2 minutes to populate at the higher end math. So, I mean, plus nobody ever needed that. So, I mean, what you're saying you know, cutting the calculation down and being good enough is not something new, I don't think.
Right, right. And there's on the back end, how you instruct the computer to do that is the kind of secret sauce. So in your case, what the computer was doing might have been before was, hey, we need to take this number and run it through, you know, we need to plug it into calculations for, he wants 20 quotes on options. So it would do all 20 and then give you one. Well, in a more efficient model, you could probably say, hey, we only want to do three. Don't even bother with the rest of the calculations and show me the three. And that's just how things kind of get faster.
Well, so is this...
The logic on the back end is altered. And that way, something like a more specific request could be processed much with less data, less energy, and much faster.
Well, Carl will be on tomorrow, so we'll ask him the question directly, but how about you getting ahead of him here a little bit and saying, he's always talking about if you have NVIDIA selling, let's say their H100 chips, they've got a pretty serious backlog on these things, I would assume. In fact, I think I know they have a pretty serious backlog. And there have been rumors, you know, unfounded, but somebody would send me podcasts of people that would say that, you know, some of their orders have been funded by them.
Right.
So they're essentially, financing their own, whatever you want to call it, order backlog, their own backlog, which is pretty scary.
Right.
But I don't know if that's true. I mean, I've read it a couple times and seen it a couple times. But, I mean, Carl's always talking about it's so dangerous because the power, you know, the power taken by this stuff, you need these massive facilities, you need to buy essentially a nuclear reactor.
And that's kind of the question that we have about this new thing is, you know, what really is going on? How is it for real? Is there anything happening? But it seems like because it's open source, you know, they believe it, and it's a real threat. In that, I think Biden moved earlier to really limit those who could buy those chips and how many.
Yeah,
they
these aren't
have.
Those chips. These are the ones.
Right. These are the ones that are much cheaper and much easier to use, and they still seem to have outperformed. So that's a big problem if you're A, the government who wants to limit them from doing that, and B, a VC who's poured, you know. whatever percent of your fund into AI.
Well, I mean, just to go on with what Carl says, I mean, he obviously knows this stuff, and he's done a nice job on several mornings of tying kind of it all together. That if you need this, then you need the power, then you need the money.
Well, in terms of CapEx from I think it was Microsoft and Meta, they've committed probably full years of operating earnings, like $60 billion or whatever it was for.
So how can these guys do this for $8 million? I mean, it seems a little bizarre, doesn't it? $6 million.
Well, that was the guy's my age. I think that was the funding. So,
well, I mean, I guess
he's got a master's and all the stuff you know that you need.
So
to
do
understand.
I can barely understand what I'm talking about here.
He's got it in like electrical engineering. So
it's better than business.
Yeah.
Now wait a minute.
when you want to be a AI engineer,
But I mean, is the rest of what Carl's talking about? I'm trying to drag out of here. Is it? That's a bad thing to say to your guest. Is does it mean that all of a sudden anybody who's ordered up 50 of these H100s for $9 zillion a piece or whatever they cost, is sitting there going, what am I doing?
I think that's what the market's telling us.
I think it is too.
Yeah.
What
was the market cap of NVIDIA, or what is the market cap of NVIDIA?
I'll get it. There's 22 billion shares outstanding. So it's 22 billion times 100.
22 billion times 100. So, yeah, you've got $3.3 trillion in market cap.
But I know every time the thing goes up, it's 22.1 billion dollars. Let me see how good my memory is. Let me see here. I'm gonna say, how many shares do you think they got outstanding? I'm gonna say 22.1. But let me.
Well, whatever it is, I mean, even if you go back,
because they just split 10 for 1 or something, right?
Yeah, but even if you go back, call it if this set them back 3 years, You know, 3 years ago, what was NVIDIA trading? Like $30?
Yeah.
It's 100 something.
Well, but so it also split.
I think adjusted. Adjusted, it's...
Well, no, I'm wrong. 24.77, so more than almost 25.
Yeah, so, you know...
Look how much they bought back. This is... Well, they bought it. It's a 0.5% decrease in 2023. So, when you go into Google now, it doesn't just give you the answer. It says AI overview. So, talk about what we're talking about, huh?
Right. And probably logs that. So, if we're only down, call it 10 or 11% today, I mean, we still got a long way to go for this to set them back a year.
I would say you're right. But, I mean, there's people that they don't care. They're buying the dip because it's down.
Again. That's fine, but are you doing it with leverage is the question.
NVIDIA's a core hold for an awful lot of people. I mean, so is Apple. I mean, Apple's been around probably. Microsoft's down 26, that's 6%. What do you say we got a break here? S&P futures down 140, NASDAQ futures down 150. Come back, let us with John Flanagan pile on. We're going to talk about other stuff, but we can hang in on this one. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jock.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. As you all know, the broad markets, especially tech, have been hot for a while. Lots of reasons. New technology, small fixed income returns, a lot of Fed cash, maybe some good management. Recently, however, the rates on fixed income investments, even U.S. Treasury, have risen from the very low levels. Treasuries are more attractive. There might even be some interesting bonds out there. Also, the bull run has some leading stocks with historically high valuations, maybe making long-only positions a little riskier. So what to do? I think the answer is flexibility. The market may keep going higher. It may not. It could even go down. Is fixed income a thought for some part of the portfolio? Rates are not zero anymore. You may want to protect some gains. Think about some rebalancing, address some growing concentration issues, maybe thinking about commodities. We at PTI may have a solution just right for you. Open an account at PTI Pro Direct, PTI's online trading platform using the Interactive Broker high-end platform. There you will find competitive rates and solid execution across all product lines and traditionally high interest on money balances. In addition, at any time you can seamlessly decide for fixed income investments to access Dan Janitas at Kratos Capital for management services. Dan and his team work tirelessly to achieve the highest returns they can, whatever risk category you are comfortable with. You can also quickly access my team for investment services and a wide array of investment strategies on the security or commodity side, protective strategies, concentration issues, or straight long. In one place, you'll be able to be flexible and ride whatever the future market holds with people you are used to hearing and trusting every day. Need help? You got it. Don't need help? That's okay too. You'll have a great self-management platform with help always available. This market can change on a dime. I believe, like everyone else, having the right people there if needed is the way to go. Call me at 312-663-4310 or email me at time@ptisecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Well, welcome back, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom. I'm Matt Byrne on the board. We have Greg Pappas in the studio. We got Kevin O'Neill to talk about football. We got John Flanning to talk about pardons. We got all kinds of stuff lined up and on the markets in the crapo, as they used to say in the trading field. Actually, I cleaned it up a little bit. SP futures down 137. I guess that's a little bit of a rally. NASDAQ futures down 840. The big move here is in NVIDIA down 16. We got Meta down 21. Microsoft down 25. We got Marvell's getting its ass kicked too here. They're down 14%. Obviously, this affects them, I would think. Oracle's down 15. We got stuff down here, so it's not over in Europe, not so bad. The DAX down 227. It's 1%. Puts you down 22.3%, so that's hardly at all there. CAC down 56.7%. Over in Asia, Nikkei down 366.9%. Hang Seng up 131, over 20,000. 20,197 has been time getting there. Shanghai down too, so unchanged. Those are industrial profits data out of China. Another one of these deals, Greg, where the amount of stuff they made is down, yet their profits are up. Meaning, obviously, somebody raised some prices. Friday, Dow was down 140, S&P down 17, Nasdaq down 99. So it's a little bit of a hint. Really, nothing like this. Bonds down 10 basis points. Wow, 4.52. The Bund down 2.48. And Japan down 1.18. Big movement of interest rates here this morning. Oil down 36 cents, 74.30. Brent down 35 cents, 78.15. Natural gas down 24 cents, 378. So not much going on there. Gold, which was down a bunch earlier, and it came rallying back, but now it's still down 12. But 27.66. Silver down 26 cents, 30.92. Copper down 3 cents, 429. Foreign exchange, the dollar is getting crushed here because we got the euro is up to 105, and we got the British pound is 125. So this is a bad day for the dollar. The euro had been down to 104, now it's at 105. Doesn't seem like a lot, but 1% on a foreign exchange transaction is big dough. It's big dough. Just saying, big dough, big dough. Is that an accurate description, right? Big dough? I don't know if that is or not.
I don't know. Australian hasn't really moved that much.
I'm saying 1% move in the currency, considering the size of that market, is a huge move.
Oh, yeah.
Bitcoin, wow. Down $5,700, $99,248. Not sure what the connection is with this there, but there must be one. Matt, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Duck Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah, once again, they are currently 6:38 a.m. on January 27, 2024. As far as weather in Chicago, it's 19 degrees at Midway and O'Hare, high of around 46 today with increasing clouds and wind gusts up to 45 miles per hour. Tomorrow, sunny with a high of 44. Down in Phoenix, Arizona, 45 degrees right now, expect partial sunshine and a high of 60 degrees. As far as the NFL yesterday, conference championships took place, with the Philadelphia Eagles beating out the Commanders 55-23, and the Kansas City Chiefs won against the Bills 32-29. This will be the Chiefs' third consecutive Super Bowl since 2023, and the second matchup with the Eagles in that time. The Super Bowl will be on February 9th at 5:30 p.m. So I got Chief, over to you.
We have Kevin and we have Jan.
We do indeed.
Welcome. Sorry, guys, we didn't get to you earlier, but the market's kind of going goofy here. Kevin,
I tried to chime in on your stuff, but the sound wasn't working, and Matt fixed it, and I'm pretty sure, I'm just reading between the lines. Matt didn't say this, but I'm reading between the lines is that it was all Greg's fault.
probably, but are you sure you didn't mute thyself?
Oh, I was definitely not muted.
No, it was definitely on our side.
So Matt's taking a hit over here. It's okay.
Well, and good morning, everybody. Good morning, John. Good morning, Greg. Good morning, Tom.
Morning, Kevin. Morning, all.
Good morning.
You got to talk a little bit about...
Just to put a bow on your conversation, Carl has talked about, specifically several times has mentioned, that whatever the next generation of AI winds up being, is going to be cheaper, it's going to be more power efficient, and that there's a lot of people who have a lot of capital expenditure money tied up in the current generation, and all of a sudden their stuff is going to be obsolete while this is all still sitting on their books in the early stages of the depreciation cycle.
So that's
a big hit. Now, we got to remember, this is an announcement from China, so there is a decent chance that there's a lot of BS in it.
Let me sort of ask you this. If the guy talked about it last Wednesday at Davos, this is one of the reasons why I love the market. Why today? Why not Thursday? Why not Friday?
What else was announced last week? What else came out last week?
Out of Davos? I have no idea.
Well, not Davos. What came out of the Trump administration?
Well, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, so it's not... We're not sitting at with a looking at a single factor on the market.
Well, the market seems to be looking this singly this morning, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, because sooner or later it's got to sift through all the other crap and then figure out what really happened to them this week.
Well, I mean, I just... You know, it's...
It'll normalize at something. You know, I don't think it's... I'd be surprised if we're going into a free fall.
Well, if all of a sudden everybody decides these 800 chips that got to be a fraction of the cost of the 80s instead of the 100s, that's a problem for NVIDIA. It might be more than a $16 problem.
Yeah, I would say so.
Well, what about the futsal? We got to do a little bit on that. Since it was, do you think the guy made that first down or not?
Oh, which one?
The big controversial one.
The sneak?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought he did.
They kind of turn him to the side, though.
Well, they can turn him to the side, but once the ball, it's where the ball, it's the most forward progress on the ball, unless he voluntarily turns aside.
So you think it was pretty darn close. I mean,
yeah, I'm surprised. Yeah, and I'm surprised that replay assist didn't do anything about it. But the other part of that in the game was Josh Allen, basically on that fourth down, that last fourth down play that Buffalo had, made a miracle throw, and while it would have been a really nice catch, the ball went through the receiver's arms. He could have been 30 yards downfield with a first down and already in field goal range to tie with a chance, with a couple of minutes and his timeouts left to try and get in the end zone. So it wasn't as bad a drop as as last week's, but, there's another one where some guy's got to live with that one for a long time.
Well, it looked like it was kind of almost a Hail Mary in the air, and the guy had to kind of run for it like he never thought he was going to get there, and all of a sudden he did.
And he did, yeah. And surprise, surprise. So I told you on Friday I would never bet against Mahomes in a close game, and so it landed that way. And as far as the Commanders go, they just look like a young team and a young quarterback, not quite ready for prime time, but they had a good season, so good for them. But they also had a lot of turnovers, and. You don't get to make mistakes in the conference championship games.
Well, if I stop in at the watering hole tonight, all I'm going to hear about is the refereeing and the Taylor Swift effect.
Well, you know what? I wasn't paying much attention. How many times was Taylor Swift on camera?
Not as many. Not as when she was hugging what's-her-name every 2 seconds last week.
Yeah, you know what? And Taylor said that she would she was not going to go. What, she didn't want to go to Texas. She didn't want to go someplace because she said she didn't want to go to states where they voted for Trump. But Kansas City's in Missouri.
Is the stadium in Missouri or across the river?
Oh, I'm pretty sure it's in Missouri.
Well, who voted the new stadium down? Was it the Missouri side or the Kansas City side? Or the Kansas side? I think it was the Missouri side.
Look up Arrowhead Stadium and see where it's located.
But I think... I think they voted a new stadium down recently, right?
That's a pretty new facility.
Well, does that matter? It doesn't have enough skyboxes. It's obsolete.
Should send one this way.
It's got skyboxes for Taylor Swift. What more do you need?
You always need more. You know how many the one in Dallas has?
Yeah, probably about 300.
320 or something?
Yeah. Bell's got a lot of oil money. And, you know, Kansas City, it's not like Kansas City doesn't.
No, Kansas City, you know, I was surprised. I looked up, like, the 10 coldest games. Like, two or three of them have been in Kansas City. They get some cold weather. You would think it's, you know, in Chicago, you think everything south is going to get decent weather. It's not necessarily
true. Yeah, the real Midwestern part of the country is, you just get some badass stuff in the winter.
Well, you know, I'm surprised. I mean, everybody loves Mahomes, obviously, and we ought to because he's a great ball player. But that offensive line gets no kudos whatsoever. Plus, you see the block Kelce nailed that one guy when Mahomes was running to the end zone at the last touchdown?
Yeah, they get good blocking, but did you also notice how quickly the ball gets out?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
In their offense? I mean, it's like catch it and throw it. And that is in large part design of the offense because you can't possibly cover everybody in the first step. But it also requires a quarterback to really understand who's going to be open based on what's happening before the snap. But it really is kind of beautiful to watch because they don't take any time. It's not like I'm going to drop back, survey the field, and pick a receiver and throw it. Nothing like that.
Well, you know, when we had a touch league, and of course the sophistication we had was, you know, nothing compared to these guys. But I was always when I was coaching the offense, I was always an apostle of everybody has their route, and when you walk up there, you look at the defense, and you pick your primary receiver, knowing which route's going to be open, because you should know what they all are, and you can see the defense, and you can figure out which one they can't cover, as opposed to most colleges where you run downfield, we'll throw it to you, and there's 15 defenders around the guy, you throw it to him anyway. But
I'm not sure that's so accurate for college anymore either. For as an example, just to give you an idea, if you go back to that long run that Jeremiah Smith had in the Indiana game, where he ran 98 yards, that was actually set up by the wide receiver identifying the coverage because the play was a run pass option. And so you have the wide receiver who lines up and immediately identified what the coverage was going to be, turned and, signaled that to Riley Leonard, and then went into motion because they were in man-to-man coverage. When he went into motion, he took a man out of the out of that side of the formation with him. And Leonard's read for that was to give the ball immediately. He didn't hesitate. It wasn't like he was trying to read the defense. He knew it was going.
Well, they've definitely gotten smarter.
Running back, and all of a sudden it just broke free. So there's a lot of that. That's the, that's how, run pass option is built so that you can read what the defense is doing in real time, and most of the time that's what happens. But when Kansas City runs it, he already knows. He knows before the ball comes whether he's going to give it or pull it out.
What did you make of, and we're going to shift here to the other stuff going on, but who was the color guy in that game? Was it Olsen or Romo? Olsen did one, Romo did the other.
Romo had the AFC game.
So he mentioned that the last play you were talking about, he said it was the first time that they had used a corner blitz like the entire playoffs. They were saving it for the one play. The last play when they got to Allen, where they the guy might have caught. He says the first time they totally surprised Buffalo with that corner blitz.
Yeah, not the first time they practiced it, just the first time they've actually used it.
Yeah, interesting stuff. I mean, two great teams, obviously. Commanders, if they don't turn the ball over, I think that would have been a game. But give the other guys the ball. Plus that running back on Pittsburgh is really good.
Philadelphia.
Pittsburgh. Yeah, not Pittsburgh. Don't worry, the Bears are hiring new coaches. They'll be there next year.
That was finalized over the weekend.
Year, but I was pleased to hear one of the interviews, and then I'm going to leave you to John because this is really John's time. One thing I did like hearing about Johnson is when they asked about his offense, he said, well, I have things I like to do, but I want to sit down with my quarterback and see what it is that he likes to do as well. And then we will design our offense around the strengths of the quarterback. which we have not seen in the last two coaches or the last two quarterbacks and the coaches they've hired who come in and say, we're running my system, we're going to teach him to run my system. Good management at any level in any venue is saying, what are my people's strengths? Let's play to those.
You have a little more intellectual view on this. The rest of the fans, we're going to like tackle harder and block harder. Every football coach has said that from day one. And somewhere along the line, you got to sit down with your offensive line and say, what can they do? And right now, they can do nothing.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. And, you know, what are they capable of doing? Well, if they're not capable of, you know, holding out a pass rush for any length of time, then why are you doing drop back, scan the field? You know, I mean, this kind of stuff is just, it's stupid. And, you know, are we saying that career football coaches can be stupid? Yeah, just like we're saying that, you know, career management people in the business world can be stupid. Yeah. So,
well, except if you get in the last 2 minutes of the game.
There's plenty of stupidity to go around, guys.
Oh, yeah. But in the last couple of minutes of the game, when you have to be dropped back and go, that's why only a few teams can do it, because they have the line that can do it, and the quarterback to a huge extent. But anyway, Kevin, thank you for the update. So you think the Bulls are going to come back and win this year? No, huh?
I'm sorry, the Bulls? I have not seen them play once.
Don't. It all does. If you ever think you want to watch basketball, don't even consider it. John?
You look at it and you go, that ain't basketball, huh?
Yeah. John, how are you, bud? Did you watch the football? You watch what's going on in the political world? We've had a slew of people.
Political world? I didn't catch the football train, so I was reading other stuff. So.
Well, we had a bunch of people that were deported. We had, I'm hung up on this pardon thing, because I've had people that I think are really, really smart going through this. And Lou sent me a thing, and I sent out to you guys last night. Lou sent me a thing where a guy did a full report starting from the Constitution through two Supreme Court decisions. At the end of the day, I wrote back to Lou, I go, this is like clear as mud. I mean, I have no idea what this is. I mean, there's kind of offhand comments in some of the Supreme Court. What we're talking about is whether there seems to be two kind of pardons now. One is a pardon from something they know you did or think you did or something. Another is a pardon for in case you did something, which I don't know where that comes from anywhere, to be honest with you, but again, I'm not the attorney.
No.
The other is it an implied admission of guilt to take the pardon? Because you don't, the thing is not expunged. Both the conviction and the pardon are on the record, right? So you can't be punished right. for it. Now the question is, can they drag your ass in front of Congress and now you can't take the Fifth because there's nothing they can do to you about it? Now, I don't know. That's been read in by a lot of people. I'm not so sure either of those decisions or the Constitution. I saw it anywhere in there. So I'm more blind. And the more I hear about it, the more blind I am. Is it just me?
No, it's a quagmire, Tom. And I think, you know, the plan behind the pardons and the way they were doled out, too, which, you know, I think is worth commenting on also, suggests that it was just kind of a crapshoot by Biden's, knowing that, you know, it isn't a foolproof, you know, get out of jail, you know, card that's, you know, just going to work immediately on its face, but it will result in litigation and, you know, lots of other, you know, tests of this before we're through. The thing I've been trying to figure out is, you know, why did Biden pardon Hunter Biden with the same kind of pardon he granted his family, but he granted it weeks earlier, and then waited until the last 5 minutes while he was in office to pardon, you know, everybody around him, and perhaps even himself, they're saying now, although that wasn't public. Why the gap in time? And do you have any thoughts on that?
To be honest, Jan, I normally, as everybody knows, I normally will read enough to where I gain an opinion. I am totally perplexed by this whole stuff. And like I said, the more people are helping me out by sending me the research and history of it, the more confused I'm getting. I honestly, okay, well, I pardon you. Well, from what? I don't know, in case you did something. Well, okay. Then you have you know, Trump in issuing blanket pardons for everybody on that one day. Well, some people just kind of went along for the ride. Some people actually did stuff. I don't know if they're the same. Do you? I mean, I don't think there are as many people necessarily.
Well, they're not the same. I mean, a lot of the January 6th people have been in prison for years, and well, some in solitary confinement.
But I mean, I can
awaiting
see
some trial, Tom. There's been no determination of guilt on
John. There's people in Guantanamo.
But they've been imprisoned.
There are people in Guantanamo they know are innocent.
They've lost their.
We've lost our mind. There's people in Guantanamo we know have been innocent for 23 years that are still there. I mean, that's insane in America, for God's sake. Okay, they're not in America, they're in Guantanamo. I guess you'd play that card on me, but that doesn't fly either. I would have considered, just to clean things up, commutation of sentences for a lot of the people on January 6th. I think a lot of them got too much of a sentence. You know, I don't disagree with all of it, but some people did get hurt. I mean, I didn't read them all, but it seems, like I said, I don't really agree with either one of them doing all.
And they
all
weren't
stuff.
All treated the same way,
right?
I mean, there were distinctions. The vast bulk of the ones that were pardoned did nothing more than trespass, as far as I can tell. We're talking about, you know, over 1,000 people.
Okay,
I
think a lot of people are just whatever. They got caught up in it, and they shouldn't be in jail. I'm with you on that, but I'm just saying that it seems
to put it in perspective, Tom. You know, when Brett Kavanaugh was being confirmed for the Supreme Court, the Supreme Court building, when it had not yet opened, was attacked that morning by a bunch of demonstrators using, you know, bats and everything else to you know, batter down the doors of the Supreme Court. I mean, that to me is breaking and entering on its face. Nobody was charged. No, nobody was arrested. Nothing.
Well, somehow, Jen,
because that was the permitted form of protest. It was against, you know, a Republican undergoing a confirmation hearing. January 6th was the opposite, and they had everybody out in spades to have mass arrests, and they've been pursuing people for years too. The time wasted on this, just from a personnel standpoint, it boggles the mind.
Well, here's my goal, Jennifer. My goal for the next decade, Jen, is if somebody made me Solomon tomorrow, I would say, okay, guys, whatever's happened has happened. But tomorrow, if somebody's guilty of something, I don't want to hear anybody saying, oh, I know somebody on the other side is even more guilty a year ago. We got to stop that. We've got to stop that. Because that does, I mean, you know, if I bust into the Capitol and do some stuff or some other place, it's on me. It's not, oh, gee, some right winger busted in some place 3 weeks ago and he didn't. Someday we got to cut that off. I mean, if Trump does something stupid or Biden does something stupid, I don't want to hear about Hillary. I don't want to hear about Abraham Lincoln. It's on you. Am I too goofy with this or what? Just saying.
No, I just think that the conduct surrounding January 6th is so suspicious that you have to make a presumption that, except in those, you know, limited cases where people were, you know, committing acts of violence, some of whom I would bet are also FBI informants, but I can't prove that, but I will suggest that. Everything surrounding it is so suspect that there's no reason to keep people in prison for years before they're brought up on charges. I think that's about as big an abuse of the criminal justice. Even Cook County doesn't.
I don't accept the idea that any sort of an election here, which is sets us apart from the banana republics, that if somebody loses, they don't go gracefully, and the people that support them don't tear down the Reichstag, for God's sake. We can't have that. I mean, now, I don't
know. I'll tell you what else we can't have, Tom. When you have a congressional committee like the House January 6th committee that was impaneled under very bizarre circumstances with the way people were selected to investigate what happened on January 6th and got all the airplay and publicity that they could possibly handle, and then they destroy all of the records of the proceedings.
I'm not going to justify that. What I'm saying is we need
To me, Tom, that no wonder they were issued.
But, Jan, I'm coming at this...
The conduct of the...
But I'm trying to... I'm coming at this like at all levels of our life, to be honest with you. I mean, I'm not trying to just... You're right. This thing has been a goat bleep since day one on both sides. I understand that. But now...
People want to get behind it. This is what, you know, the crazies and the Democratic caucus want to keep this alive forever.
I don't disagree.
But the population cap is long ago.
But we have
the ones who
we have people in this country. We have people in this country that all they do is hate now, one side or the other. Tanner, we got to stop that. I mean, last time I went with my brothers, and it was wasn't much traffic, which is life-threatening when there's that much traffic, by the way. So all of a sudden, one whatever goes flying by me like 100 miles an hour. Now, you would think most people in society would say, hope that guy doesn't kill somebody. And, oh, by the way, I hope he gets pulled over. Well, that's not going to happen. Within the next 2 minutes, I'm going to say 10 to 15 other people are outraged that he's getting away with something, and off they fly at 100 miles an hour. I'm going to say between 90 and 100. People are I'm going 70, and I was like I was parked. And this is now, he's getting away with it, so can I. And I don't, someplace, somewhere, you got to pull a guy over, you got to impound his car, and if he says the other guy was going faster, you say, I'll get him next time. I mean, my issue, John, is it not that all this crap that's going on in Washington, which is an issue, I guess, it's permeating itself down in society. Right now, nobody thinks they should be arrested for anything because they don't trust the Congress. They don't trust the presidency, who's ever happened to be in there. Half don't trust this guy. Half didn't trust the other guy. And we don't trust it. If we lose total respect for our citizens, the speed limit on the Ryan is 55 because that's the speed the thing was designed to handle. And if you go 100, guess what? Somebody's going to get killed. If people don't believe that, they don't believe that there's some method to our madness, you know, some difference between us and a banana republic, we got a problem. And I think we have a problem. And when you guys argue about something specific, okay, the Democrats did this, yeah, but the Republicans did this. I get all that, but somehow we got to stop it, don't you think?
Well, it would be nice if we did.
But I mean,
the thing about the traffic situation is, remember one of the things that I learned, you know, driver's ed, I'm sure you did too, is that you want to not drive much slower than the surrounding traffic because that creates a dangerous
situation. I'm not going to be going 100 miles an hour in my pickup truck.
Yeah, if you're going 70 and everybody around you is going 100, I don't like doing that either. But
this had nothing to do with that. This is, he's getting away with something, I got to do it too.
Yeah, but I don't like going 70, Tom, when everybody around me is going 100.
Well, not everybody.
Don't like going 55.
Not everybody, or else he wouldn't have been passing everybody up.
No, but nobody is abiding by the speed limit. Nobody's even close to abiding by it.
Well, yeah.
And you're a freak if you do. So,
well, Jan and I used to drive in from the south side every day.
This is the culture we've got, Tom.
That's what I'm saying. It's permeating up and down. It's like if you're not cheating, you're not trying. In the business world, everywhere. And that's just not my world. Like, maybe it is. I mean, Dr. J and I used to drive in from the south side years ago. And there was always traffic. And the minute one person, usually of, it doesn't matter. Whatever the expressways is, depending on what expressways you want, the people that are the breaking all the rules are like a different color depending on the expressway. So there's like, in a Kennedy, if somebody's going 100, he's probably white. I mean, it's crazy. But all of a sudden, one person would hit the shoulder. The minute they do, we'd both sing out, to the shoulder, and all of a sudden, 10 people would be on the shoulder. Because one guy's doing it, they all got to do it. One morning we were laughing because around one curve in the Ryan, there was a squad car sitting there and a guy banged in a squad car. And all of a sudden there's like 15 people lined up behind the squad car and he's writing tickets for everybody. I was so happy. Just saying. Is that because of my south side cop mentality or what?
The only place I see any attempt now to enforce speed limits is on entrance ramps. And I've noticed this a couple of times that the entrance ramp to the Edens Expressway to 94 at Foster Avenue where the turn is really tight when you come around the corner, and you can't see a, you know, state police squad car lurking there until you're practically upon it. And if you're going, say, 45 or 50 on that entrance ramp, about to, you know, start going 75 on the Edens, you're going to be pulled over before you get on the expressway, which I, is a place to start, maybe.
Well, it's easier to pull you over there than if you're going 100. I wouldn't want to stop one of these guys last night.
It's easier to pull somebody over on an entrance ramp when they're going 50 than in the middle of traffic when they're going 100. So,
well, how much of a...
You don't like...
Well, we've been talking about government enforcement. How much of today's sell-off here... By the way, we just piled on. We're down 130, and the S&P is down 820 in the NASDAQ, which is actually a rally. This has been... Greg talked about it earlier very well about Chinese... DeepSeek AI appears to be popping on the market. It was talked about on Wednesday in Davos, and somehow or another we got this delayed reaction. Seems to be as good as OpenAI and some of these other ones, and they're using NVIDIA chips that are not their premium ones. It appears like they did it pretty reasonably, like in the millions of dollar range instead of the billions. And all we've been talking about for the last 2 years, are there's people buying... I can't say nuclear facilities, right? Right, Greg, to power up the AI. And now this happens, it's almost like, oops. It's kind of what Carl's been talking about. Once somebody finds it, how to do it better, you not only don't need the machines, you don't need the power. Now, I'm not saying we're there yet. Boy, the market sure thinks that there's a problem here this morning. We got Marvell down 15. We got Oracle down 16. We got all kinds of stuff down. Again, we seem to be stabilizing here. But what do you... the government... I'm going to say in the last 8 years of government, Jen, which is four Republican, four Democrat, is probably the most incompetent I've ever seen in my lifetime. Or maybe I'm just looking at it all closer or whatever. Obviously, we had the COVID problem, which was a big problem, and then we had the money supply issues. We had stuff that people made mistakes because they were under stress, so we say. But now we're talking about in the last 2 days, we've had a 50%. Tariff on Colombia, and 2 hours later it's raised. We're not going to do it now. And this kind of inconsistency coming out of places, this is not good for the market. I don't know if it's good for us, but somewhere along the line we need a, whoever it is, and I think Trump is doing some stuff that maybe should have been done a while ago. I'm halfway there with the guy, but this on again, off again, this, oh, the guy insulted me, oh, you know, he likes me now. That's not policy. I mean, hopefully that's just the first few weeks to make everybody happy in it, and we don't do that anymore. But this I don't know. But, you know, what this weekend, that Jordan should take more Palestinians. Don't they have like 2 million? How many more are we going to put on this guy over there? I mean, what are we doing here? I mean, we just assuming nobody reads like he doesn't, or what? This kind of governmental chaos is not good for things either. I mean, is there a chance it could only be the first month and then we settle down? I hope so.
Well, we'll see. I mean, I would only say that, you know, we've got a period of 16 or 17 years of government incompetence, you know, starting back in 2008, really. So I wouldn't just put the boundaries around the last two administrations by any means.
Oh, so you're going to say
it's kind of like the speed.
Oh, so you're going to.
Well, it's like the speed.
You're going to take the Republican look and say George Bush was a genius. He started two wars.
I'll go back farther. I could easily go back to. To 88 or 86 or 84, you name it. I mean, I'm just saying that isn't productive after a while. But I would say Trump coming on the scene when he did after 8 years of Obama, which I'd say the Obama administration was an easy one to follow in some ways, but Trump wasn't given much of a chance with his appointments and the people he was limited to appointing. And he couldn't undo all of the damage of the Obama years in a single administration. And then you tack on Biden's administration, which is an extension of the Obama years, except it's on steroids, I think. You got a mess like you have on the Kennedy or the Ryan triangle for his speed limits. Everything has been, you know, overlooked to such an extent that it's grossly, you know, under-policed. And there's been no, you know, quick reaction really to anything of any consequence.
Well, how do we stand it down? I mean, the little history, and you know more about this than me, so I'm not gonna try and debate you on it. But to me, McConnell's unbiased enmity towards the Obama administration, I thought was somewhat of a problem. Maybe because he actually said it. I mean, it doesn't surprise me that the Trump people got problems putting people in their spots after what the Republicans did to Obama on the last year with not even bringing the Supreme Court guy to the floor. You knew there was going to be retribution for that. I mean, they started to act like imbeciles way back, and every time a new person comes in, now there's more reprisals, more bad blood, and start over again. I mean, I don't know when it all started necessarily, but it's got to end. I think that, again, this is my peace morning here. It's got to end. I mean, so what does that mean? If a guy's in his last year, he can't nominate a Supreme Court guy, or is it the last 2 years? I mean, everybody forgets that piece. That wasn't right. Now, for the Democrats to do that to Trump, that wasn't right either. But now we're piling on this. We're almost like we're the Hatfields and McCoys here. I mean, and I'm just saying, I need it to stop. Otherwise, we're going to be a banana republic. I've said that five times this morning, but I honestly believe that. That's what sets us apart, is not doing stuff like that. But now we do it, it seems. I mean, right or not? I mean,
you know. I will say we dodged a bullet in not getting Merrick Garland on the Supreme Court.
Well, whatever.
I didn't
vote him down. I'm just saying, vote him down. Just don't say that the president doesn't have the right to put a guy up his last year.
No, but there's no guaranteed right to get, you know, the appointment confirmed either.
You got to at least deal with it. You know what?
Yeah, but McConnell is worth spending a minute or two talking about, Tom, because I've given up trying to, you know, predict or figure out what is driving this guy. And, you know, of all the senile senators that I can point to in recent history, he may be perhaps now the most senile, the most enfeebled.
Is his wife still doing
stuff?
His whole
posture.
Is his wife still?
I'm sorry.
Is his wife still?
Oh, Elaine Chao. Yeah. Well, I think in large part an explanation of how he's able to negotiate, you know, not confirming, you know, Pete Hegseth for Secretary of Defense, but voting for Lloyd Austin and all the other Biden appointments on the opposite side of the aisle. To me, that shows that there's no philosophy.
A lot of people have real serious issues with this Defense Department guy. It has to do with women and booming. A lot of people just don't like that, John.
McConnell's issues with Pete Hegseth was he's not serious about China.
Well, he's also... some people think he's not a serious candidate, but whatever.
That was McConnell's main issue, and it's...
There's people saying that
his wife had influence on that, and there's...
Secretary? Was she have two cabinet positions, John, or one? And she was on...
She was Secretary of Transportation under...
I thought she was something else. But she also was on the Wells Fargo board for all the time they had problems, right? She's been on how many boards is she on? I mean, she's very accomplished.
Well, and the family is one of the largest shipping company owners in China.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what they were... Communist Party.
Yeah, that's what the... speculation was.
Well, who was the other guy? Phil Graham. His wife was the dean of discipline for Enron, wasn't she? On the board, she was the
compliance officer.
She was the compliance board person, right?
Yes, compliant for whom?
Yeah, but she was what Big Jim Thompson was to Hollinger.
Yeah.
Well, anyway,
well, the Elaine Chao. Matt McConnell, you know, the Chao McConnell marriage, you know, I think there could be volumes written about that. It's highly, highly irregular, I would say.
Well, you know, Phil Graham.
Elaine Chao's sister, who was killed in that crazy Tesla accident down in Texas.
Oh, yeah, year. Yeah. Well, my buddy.
The car just drove itself into the lake or something.
My buddy, Dr. J.
That looked like some sort of.
We were on. He was on the board with me at the SIBO, and we went to one of these governmental deals in Washington, and our board meeting was out there. So who wanders in? But Phil Graham was the guy who was gonna give a little speech, right? So John's kind of Well, he's colorblind for one. We also like to go to get ties on Canal Street, right, for like $5. So he gets his tie. I'm not talking about yellow, but I mean like really yellow. Like, so we're standing there shaking hands with everybody. Phil Graham comes up to John. Say, son, boy, that's quite a tie. If I didn't already have my coffee, I'd look at that thing and I'd be woken up. He says, this is Phil Graham. John's like, what's he talking about? John, that thing is so yellow. Where'd you buy that thing? Oh, I got it yesterday. I'm looking at L Street. Oops. Anyway. But, no, he's a big, tall guy. He's taller than me, Phil Graham. He's a big guy. And he gave a nice little speech and everything, but, boy, you wonder if that was a marriage made God knows where, huh? And his wife.
Oh, God, yeah.
Well, she influenced him. Didn't he stop Greg, you should know this. Didn't he stop any kind of attempt? No, I'm not a big fan of regulation, but didn't he stopped any kind of attempt to regulate, essentially, I use the term over-the-counter energy market, didn't he? And that's how Enron made their dough. You know, California had so many stupid rules, right? That you couldn't over. They essentially had price curbs on energy in California. This is a very simple explanation for a very complicated issue. So what they did was, the people in were making energy in California. Enron, they'd send the power to Arizona from California. Then when California had a problem with not enough energy for air conditioning, whatever, Arizona would sell them back their own power for like three or four times what they bought it for. There was a loophole in the law. And that's how Enron made all this cash. Was moving people's own energy around and selling it back to them. Genius, wasn't it? Let me sell you your own water. Okay, yeah. Okay. Why don't we think of stuff like that? Why doesn't Greg think of stuff like that? He should be our sneaky guy. Finds his stuff. Greg, what's the matter with you? How come we can't sell somebody their own water? That's what they were doing. And they had how many? One of the guys I played basketball with at the club, his daughter was one of the auditors. Like, how long did the investigation go? That was like 10 years after? 7 years after? They still had auditors trying to put the thing together? I think she said they had like 100 they had like 100 outside companies. I mean, it's unbelievable that all the guys up top had these little companies that were cutting out pieces before it got to the main company. It was genius. It was way worse than the railroad guys ever thought of. Anyway, Jan, we were going to take 5 minutes today before all this other stuff happened. In terms of when you talk about people being, identified by people in politics as being an enemy and the Justice Department being used to go get them. And I think that I think Trump's guilty of some stuff, but that's whatever. Just from his previous life. But the idea that anybody in this country, including him, could have a legal bill run up, $40 million or whatever it was, I think is so unconscionable, it's scary. I mean, and the Fed does that to a lot of people, and a lot of people, they do it because they don't like them. Or they get into it and they don't like you, so they keep pursuing it versus not pursue it. I think the Justice Department has a problem. And a lot of it's just people's ego. Maybe it's always been like that. But Jan and I did some research, and one of the biggest names in Illinois ever to go to jail was a gentleman named Otto Kerner. And I think that there is a chance that this was how many years ago, John? I think the same thing happened to him. In my opinion.
I mean, I was reviewing it, in the last day or two, just refreshing my memories of it. It's kind of a textbook example of how you don't want, investigations to be pushed for political purposes or to benefit from, victimizing somebody. I think the Kerner, so-called crimes arose out of stock options.
Are we really arguing that people like Phil Graham and Otto Kerner aren't part sleazebag? Is that what we're saying?
I'm not saying anybody's perfect.
I mean, it's pretty clear.
The stock options with Kerner were, the manager of Arlington and Washington Park assumed that in order to get favorable race dates at Arlington Park, that Koerner, who was governor, was accepting stock options.
Right, so they're guilty for giving him the bribe, and he's guilty for taking it.
Sold them in, like, 1968, reported the income, and I mean, there was no... She assumed it was a business expense. It turned up on her tax forms. She didn't think, she didn't have any intention of bribing anybody. She said she was never charged for anything.
Start at the beginning, John. Just start at the beginning. Where we're going with this is not, like, you know, Greg reads a thing on X and...
Oh, but Phil Graham was clearly conflicted.
But I'm saying, Otto Koerner
clearly conflicted, and they got in trouble. I'm not seeing the big part.
There's a huge issue because he was tapped. He was considered to be such a guy that was, you couldn't, you know, morally was above board.
Yeah. Okay, nepotism. What that was.
He was put in charge of something called the Koerner Commission.
Nepotism.
Oh, okay. The Koerner Commission was, in the time of Great Society and all this other stuff, the Koerner Commission was charged with a study to find out what race relations and things were like in this country, John, something along those lines. And they spent a whole bunch of time on it.
I can spend a whole bunch of time and money on worthless things, it's not...
Greg, it was not...
It's a perfect example of government wasting time and money chasing the public wants to talk about.
It came out... And I have this cynical view of the past. In those days, people actually would work on stuff like this.
It's a waste of time then. Okay. It's still a waste of time.
He came out with a report that basically said what the programs and what we were doing is we were driving ourselves into a situation where we have a separate, that the black people end up like in a subclass. That all the programs that we had were not working. That they were actually driving people the wrong way. And this came out, and it was like a fart in church, even though it was absolutely correct, wouldn't you say, John? Absolutely correct. And Lyndon Johnson...
Yeah, I mean, you call for a complete overhaul of the welfare system.
Yeah, which never happened.
It actually recommended a guaranteed annual income, too. I mean, it's...
Which Nixon sort of did, which Nixon came out with the negative income tax. But Lyndon Johnson was furious. So then the dude gets an appellate court position, and everything, and then they sort of go after him. Now, when they say go after him, Big Jim Thompson made an absolute life out of this conviction. And he gave us...
Yeah, because he saw that he was taking money from somebody who was supposed to be regulating governing.
He ended up being what? The governor for how many terms?
He was a judge, right?
I mean, you're supposed
to know the law.
I'm saying what...
Or no, he was a U.S. attorney.
Get out of here. You have your opinion. What I'm saying, the history of it, why would you even go after somebody like that?
Because he was a U.S. attorney who was taking money from people.
Because
it
made Jim Thompson's life.
Or that. I mean, or the clearly obvious fact that he ended up a U.S. attorney. He's supposed to know that you're not supposed to do that. And then he did it, and then he made money. And he was arrogant enough to put it out in front of everybody and not even try to hide it.
He thought it was not a crime.
Well, he's an idiot. He was a U.S. attorney. How much do you actually know about this? I know what I read about it.
Okay, where?
I don't know. In
his view of it was
he not a U.S. attorney?
His view of this, I would no. He was not.
He was governor when he was governor.
No, he was a U.S. attorney before he was governor. You're supposed to know that you're not supposed to do that kind of stuff. He got elected governor. He started doing that stuff, and then he got in trouble. I'm not seeing the big problem.
The point was...
There were 17 counts against Koerner at trial, and the trial went on for over a year.
Yeah.
It's like postal fraud.
There were 14 counts that he was convicted on 17. 14 were overturned on appeal. That left four charges on mail fraud, and that's what stuck.
Mail fraud, which I always felt, if
the only thing you can get to stick is a mail fraud charge, you had a pretty weak case to begin with. So,
some of the stuff that goes down federally, when my buddy, you know what I'm talking about, Greg, my buddy Bill, defended this gentleman in Detroit. He said, of course, the guy was somewhat of his own worst enemy. He wasn't being an attorney, he was a little... Sorry, John, a little arrogant. He helped people get across the border that were in Syria. Remember the group that went up? They were Catholics, right, Jan? They were, and the who were the idiots that were going? That was doing killing everybody in Syria for a while? ISIS. ISIS, right?
Yeah.
Well, they had these people. They got them up on a mountain, and they couldn't defend themselves up there. So some of the things at the trial were actually people getting their throats slit and those kinds of things. Well, this guy ends up finding a way to get them in the country here. And I don't, and it was, you know, it was this 30-count indictment or 25-count indictment. And he ends up being found guilty on one of them, Dan. One of, like, the however many that were there. The one of them is he falsified a marriage certificate for somebody. And so they threw him in jail for that one, and they kept him in jail during appeal. This is what the feds will do to people once they've had their budget and once they come after you. There's no turning back on this stuff. I mean, they can. That's why they win 95% of their cases. I mean, and you know what? If Trump stops some of that stuff, I'm all for it, boy. I mean, I'm all for it, John. I really am. I think they're totally out of control. Look, Jim Thompson made an entire life on putting this guy in jail. He became a governor how many times? He was a big shot on the Board of the Trade. He was a big winner for Winston and Strong. And he gave us White Sox Park. He's the guy who set the rent at White Sox Park. I mean, what's the rent, $1 million a year?
I found reports in the press. This is in early 75 when Kerner was, you know, trying to get out of jail for time served, and eventually the sentence was reduced because he had tuberculosis and lung cancer, and he only lasted another year after that. But at the time, Thompson was being asked about his chances for running for governor after what he did to who was a very popular governor. And Kerner had a, you know, distinguished war record. He had a clean record as a U.S. attorney. His father had been the attorney general of the state of Florida. I mean, they politically connected as far back as you could go, pretty much, in the 20th century. And he was well-liked as a governor, whatever else he might have done. And Thompson was taking a lot of flack that it looked like this was just, you know, finding a way to trash his predecessor and make a name for himself by churning up, you know, the Kerner reputation. And, I mean, Thompson ended up winning because Daley ran Michael Howlett, who was, you know, a loyal servant of the Democrats and, you know, did a good job as Secretary of State, but Daley didn't put any money or enthusiasm behind the Howlett campaign, and Thompson won easily in 76. That always made me think that Daley had been bought off too. Daley was at the end of his life. He only lasted another 2 or 3 months after the 76 election. But I always thought that stunk too, the way, you know, the machine did nothing for Howlett.
You know, it's funny.
They just kind of turn him over to Thompson.
It's funny, Greg. I mean, there's no
that's
way.
Why you got to take bribes from Arlington Park people.
Well, there's no way that you can remember, but Arlington Park, I mean, up until the Bears bought the place, was the, you know, essentially the in your lifetime was the Cadillac of racetracks around here. Before that, Washington Park on the south side, I actually was there the day that they torched the place that night. How scary is that? I won, get a load of this, Greg. I won, I think, 4 races in a row. I think I've won a race since.
That was they said, you've had enough winning.
We've had enough.
We got to stop this.
But, I mean, there was a big fight for Arlington to get. Because Washington had all the key dates, Washington's and Hawthorne. So Hawthorne's the oldest park by far. And it took a while for Arlington to fight. And then all of a sudden, in your lifetime, they had the entire summer. They had all the good dates, right? It wasn't always that way. They had a fight for their dates. Fight they did. But anyway, but the idea of this selective prosecution, I don't like at any level. I guess that's my summary. And I don't like it when it happened to Trump. I don't like it when it happened to, I think it happened to Kerner. I don't think it, well, Dan Webb made a life out of putting, what's his name, George Ryan in jail, right? The guy almost won the Peace Prize. So, anyway.
I look at what's happened with the Burke trial, the Madigan trial, and other trials like this. If the purpose of, you know, bringing charges is to deter this kind of, you know, behavior in politics, they're going about it the wrong way. I mean, they're waiting to people are in their 80s to charge them. When I don't think that any of these people have been doing anything different for all of their political lives, pretty much. But they operated in a culture where this didn't offend people the way it seems not to offend them when these people are past their shelf life. And that to me doesn't make sense. If you're really interested in stopping what's dangerous or costly behavior, or that, you know, the people are sickened by, you don't go about these high profile cases of people who are, you know, likely to die after a year or two in prison. I just don't understand what they hope to accomplish by it, other than to humiliate the system, pretty much.
Well, Jan, George Stigler's class, we used to talk about this all the time. I wish you were with me, because you'd have loved it. I mean, the weird part, Greg and everybody, is Illinois is locked into this. These jobs are part-time jobs, which is a screwy world to start with. An alderman is defined as a part-time job, which now they make enough money where maybe it shouldn't be, but it always has been. So Chicago had the definition of...
And county commissioners, too.
Other positions. Well, who's full-time?
It's the part-time,
The governor, the mayor, and are there even 10 people that are full-time? All the state legislators are part-time.
Somebody should tell our current mayor, that he's got a full-time job.
Well, no kidding. But it's so strange. I mean, like George Stigler said one day in class, he goes, you got the screwiest system here in Chicago. He says, you pay people nothing, because that time Alderman made like, what, 10 grand a year, Jen? 10 or 11?
Yeah.
And he said, you pay people nothing because you know they're stealing, and then when they're stealing, you're pissed off. He goes, get it together, one or the other. I mean, and people, let me ask you this, Greg, you're a Chicago guy. I mean, if you're a, I think I heard rumors that Eddie Burke had been getting a little sloppy and been becoming demanding stuff. But if you go to the Alderman now, in a straight city, I'm not saying Chicago straight, in a straight city, if you want to build something, you buy a piece of property, you want to build something, and you go get the permit. All right, now, most places, you get the permit, and that's sort of it. But nobody wants to do what the zoning says. All right, I mean, even behind me in the these people knocked down the convent for the church behind me. They bought the property, and all of a sudden now they're a foot and a half further out in the alley with their garage than anybody else. Well, you need a variance for that, right, John? So you go to the alderman and you say, "Damn it, I need, first of all, I want my permits expedited, and I want, you know, a variance." Well, that's fine. People in hell want ice water, right? Well, no, I mean, you should like do this for me. And why exactly should I do that for you? I mean, the attitude comes both ways. And then you might say, well, my name's Greg Pappas. I'll do my best. I'll help you out. And, oh, by the way, you're going to need, you know, a property tax guy, or you're going to need an income tax guy. And here's a firm I have. You know, give them a shout. If they're, you know, competitive or something, you know, feel free to use them. But do me a favor. At least give them a call. Why does the person think that you should go through 15 different hoops for them and give you nothing? I mean, it's just good governance. He should put me ahead of everybody else. And, oh, by the way, my garage gets to be 2 feet in the alley more than anybody else. Why should you get that? I'm not saying the quid pro quo is proper, but what makes you think you deserve that? I mean, it's both sides,
good
right,
question.
Jen?
Good question.
Anyway, let's go to break, and we'll bring Nancy on and talk about, well, all these buildings are going down one at a time. You got to tell me all about that place at 600 West Chicago, John. SP Futures down 126. That's a rally, guys. Nasdaq Futures down 775. What's the low, John? What was the low, Greg? Was it under 900? Or was it 870 or something?
3.8%.
And now we're 3.5. Still bad. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
And that's how she wrote.
Blowing up by Stocks and Jocks. Sometime out, we got Matt Byrne on the board. I'm going to say that if you got a bunch of money in these big servers of NVIDIA this morning, I don't think the guys who are doing something with the smaller ones gives you a heart of gold, does it, Matt?
No, not at all.
This is brutal here. We're only down 126 now in the S&Ps. We're only down 770 in the NASDAQ. That's 3.5%. Individual stocks, NVIDIA down 1650. That's 11%, almost 12. We got Meta down 2%. We've got Microsoft down 4%. Marvell is way down. It's down 11% as well. So not good here on the home front. This has to do with this DeepSeek AI model. Somehow, I don't understand why it was talked about last Wednesday in Davos, and we're down today. And somehow we managed to make it through Thursday, Friday without anybody catching fire on it. But the bottom line is, these guys seem to come out with an AI model that is every bit as good as the stuff we have here that costs billions and billions of dollars, and they're using a server or a chip coming out of NVIDIA that's worse than the one that we won't give them because we don't want them to be able to do it. So we're not exporting the high-end NVIDIA chips. These guys are using a lower-end one. They evidently appear to have something they claim is better than stuff we're using the high-end one. And Carl will be talking about that tomorrow big time, but it's crazy. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 163.7%. They've come back some there as well. FTSE down 17.2%. CAC around down 41, down, it's 0.5%. So not much going on there. Asia's actually up a little bit. Nikkei's down 366. That's 1%. Hang Seng's up 131. That's 0.7%. Shanghai is unchanged, which is even kind of crazier probably. Bonds, the bonds are only down 9 basis points. They were down 10, 4.53. The Bund down 5 basis points, 2.50. Japan down 4, 1.18. Oil, not doing much here. Down 49 cents, 74.17. We've got gold down 16 bucks, 27.62. It had a big rally last week, so we're giving a little bit of back today. Silver down 32 cents, 30.66. Dollar kind of getting whacked. Well, it was getting whacked Friday. It's back up to 105.17. The euro is up to 105.17. Was down to 104. British pound 125. This crypto is getting whacked. Well, it was down 5,000. Now it's down 3,600. It's 4%. 101,065. It was under 100,000 an hour ago. Matt, what do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
Yeah, good morning, everyone. It's currently 7:38 a.m. on January 27th, 2024. As far as weather in Chicago, currently 19 degrees at Midway and O'Hare. High of around 46 today with increasing clouds and wind gusts up to 45 miles per hour. Tomorrow, sunny with a high of 44. Down in Phoenix, Arizona, 46 degrees right now. Expect partial sunshine and a high of 60 degrees. Briefly, on the NFL conference championships yesterday, Eagles beat out Commanders 55-23, and Kansas City Chiefs won against Bills 32-29. This will be the Chiefs' third consecutive Super Bowl since 2023, and the second matchup with the Eagles in that time. That's all I got, Chief. Back to you.
Do we have Nancy?
We do indeed.
Yeah,
Nancy,
do.
How are you? Good morning. You piled in on a day where the market's in the crapo.
Why is NVIDIA? I don't understand what's happening. Why is NVIDIA down?
DeepSeek AI coming out of China allegedly is every bit as good as some of the AI stuff here that's using cheaper chips and what did they say, Jen? $6 million in recent research? It's got to be more than that, but it's shaking the AI world here because we have a couple of companies that have bought nuclear reactors to power their stuff, and everybody's using the high-end NVIDIA chips, and these guys claim theirs is better using the not-so-high-end chips. So it's rocking the world here, although we are coming back a little bit. So there
is right.
Yeah. So take your NVIDIA and shove it someplace, or at least for the moment. But yeah, it's not good for those companies. I mean, and Carl's talked forever, a giant pile in here, about how it's not just the chip, it's the backlog, it's the power, and whenever somebody comes out with something better, you don't want to be left holding the bag on these things. Well, I'm not saying that it's definitive here. You never can't believe anything coming out of China, but why, John, am I so hung up on the guy at the big speech on Wednesday and we're down today? What happened Thursday, Friday? And why was it?
China's a pretty rocky road these days, Tom. And
yeah.
The good news is coming out about their AI, I think, is more than, counterbalanced by the horrors of their real estate market and their banking industry. So I have a hunch that some of this stress is caused by that, too. So,
well, that's probably true. I sent you that stuff about, somewhere along the line here, maybe Jan one of these days will do enough research to, this whole Sterling Bay phenomenon, I don't get. Did they condemn that property, John, over there and give it to them, or did they buy it at a cheaper price? We're talking about an area near where I live between basically Elston Avenue and the other side of the river that was all industrial. It had to be industrial for a long period of time. Then all of a sudden, okay, it's not.
Finkel Steel, right?
Finkel Steel was there, and they had. It's where all the tanneries and stuff way back in the day were in the city.
Yeah.
And all along the North Branch of the Chicago River. And they decided, okay, there were some trucking companies there. There were all kinds of stuff there. The fire department had a big repair facility. They had two or three of the recycling plants there. There was all kinds of stuff there. And all of a sudden, Sterling Bay comes up with this big idea, and I don't know the whole nuts and bolts of it is, but they caught wind of somebody, and talk about, city council. All of a sudden, all this other stuff is gone. And it's supposed to be this massive development called Lincoln Yards. And Sterling Bay is going to run this whole thing. Well, now, Jan, we've been trying to keep up with Nancy and Jan, all these buildings in Chicago now that are going for ridiculously low prices. Well, there's one that looks fairly new on Chicago Avenue, right near the river. And it just sold for 83% less than it sold in 2018. That's kind of a discount, don't you think? I mean, does nobody want to be here? I mean, are we... What's going on here? How does this not... It's never going to get over to retail pricing for houses and stuff? I mean, maybe not, but this has gone beyond carnage. I don't even know how you'd even describe it down here, would you, Jen?
No. And the... that is the old Montgomery Ward catalog house that runs along the river. It's got this, the statue on top of Diana, or, it's a very visible figure up on top of the thing. It's iconic. Part of the city's, skyline, but this is a huge hit for Sterling Bay. If this is the kind of market they're in, where they have to sell it at 80% discount, what money do they have left to continue with their projects? I just don't see how they can hang on to the project or the land they've acquired, let alone build on it. So I'm kind of concerned that this is a sign that thing just ain't ever going to happen.
I think it's
the whole Lincoln Yards
thing. I think it's decades into the future. That's what's going on in the housing world.
Bay doing it.
No, what's going on in the housing world? Nancy here.
Nothing is really moving. I mean, I don't. At first, I thought during the holidays it would slow down a little bit. But now it could be the weather that's causing it. I mean, no one's going to really go out when it's, 20 below, and no one's really interested in looking. I would say now that in football season really picks up between college and pros, So possibly people and people are putting away their holiday decorations and all that. Possibly things could pick up, you know, in February, March. But right now it isn't. There's nothing really moving at all. And I saw the article that you sent me on the from Cranes that this is the lowest or worst real estate market since 2011. Was that what the headline said on that? I don't really know if I can agree with that or disagree with that. It's just I don't really think anything has started yet this year. I think the weather has been a big factor. I just think we just came off the holidays. It's too soon to tell. And commercial property is different than residential property, but I don't see the prices continuing to go up because of the interest rates are still too high for most people.
Well, where are they? If you had to put somebody in today, what are they paying?
You're going to be, you know, in the high sixes, I would think.
Yeah, because we got a big drop down today in the 10-year rate. We're down to 4.5. It was pushing 4.8 there for a little bit, but
yeah, it was 4.8, 4.9. So, I mean, if it's 4.5, it's going to drop. You know, then you might be in the sixes. I mean, I did a loan, right before Christmas for 6 1/8%. So, you know, they've been all over the place. But the rates run off the 10-year. So if the 10-year is down, it's going to help.
Well,
it's going to help.
I mean, what's your? I don't know if you had a chance to listen to. I'm not saying you should have, but it was last Thursday, the show with my friend Bill Moriarty talking about the California situation, and he was with all those houses that Jen and I have a common friend out there. What did Dave say? Jen thinks there's 15,000 structures that have been messed up, but not all, mostly homes, but a lot of them not homes, and. Bill was saying, you're talking at least a decade for that stuff to come back. I mean, because he had involvement with some of the stuff after Hurricane Andrew. He said most of those homes were not built to the new specs. They'll probably be even more new specs, fire retardant stuff, because evidently a lot of the fire retardant stuff actually worked, the different roofs and the different. So they're going to be even more specs. So the insurance company is paying for the homes, if and when they decide to give you a check, is probably not going to cover the cost of new construction under the new codes. So by the time all that gets back together, not to mention the amount of people it takes, if you're talking 10,000 houses, what does it take? 3,500 man hours, 4,000 man hours per house. God, if you do the math, that's an awful lot of people working. For an awful long time. Do you have any view on that? Either one of you, Nancy, you go first. I mean, what do you?
I would say. I mean, I would flip back to the Hawaiian one where they had the fires, and majority of those people didn't have insurance. They've lived there their whole lives. You know, just houses went from one generation to the next. I don't think any of that has really come back yet at all.
Yeah, I don't think they're building anything there yet.
Yeah, and so I would assume that California will be the same thing. It's just not going to come back for, you know, a decade. Might even be longer than that. They don't have the I don't think we have the resources. The insurance companies, you know, like I know State Farm is State Farm of California, so that will be in a separate bucket. State Farm of Florida will be in a separate bucket. And their third bucket they're thinking of breaking away is State Farm of Illinois. Because we've had, I guess, just tons of claims off of, you know, weather.
Well, that whole
storms,
the whole area where you and Audrey live, how many roofs have been put on? The hailstorm.
Can't even imagine. Yeah, just tons and tons. We've had such severe weather. So, honestly and truthfully, I don't see them... I don't know if they even want to rebuild in all those places in California because if you have to pump the water up and have, you know, the reserves up there. I mean, they've got a lot of other infrastructure issues in order for that to all be replaced. And if you're not going to get insurance on your home, there I have heard that over half those homes weren't even insured. They couldn't afford it.
Well, that's a question I asked Bill, and I'll ask you two. I mean, what in Florida, same thing, the hurricane, right? If all of a sudden you get this check, assuming you get it, why didn't somebody just buy the remainder of it or buy the thing? Place should cost $500,000. You can't get rid of it, can't get rid of it. You, as they say in the trading floor, you puke it out to somebody at 275. Somebody just says at 275, I'll just wing it. I don't need insurance there. Go as it goes. But at some point, right, your car gets old and junky enough, you don't have collision on it, right?
I understand what you're saying, but it's the single most, you know, your home is usually your single most important or single most biggest investment you'll ever make in your life. Do you just not insure it and say, okay, I'm out $400,000?
But I'm saying at some point, BlackRock or somebody will buy them up, rent them at some price, and they just won't insure them. I mean, there's going to be a spot. Let's say the insurance is going to be $10,000 a year in Florida. And you sit there and go, well, that's interesting. If I can get it cheap enough, I just won't buy it. Now, granted, if you paid a full $500,000, you're probably going to get the insurance. But if all of a sudden nobody can afford the insurance and you buy it at $250 at a total bargain basement price, you go, screw it, I won't get it. And at some point, I mean, I don't want to go there.
If you have financing, if you're not paying cash, if you have financing, you must have insurance and they will force place it. It's in your documents. So I don't even understand. BlackRock, though, is an investment group, so they may be afford to do that. You know, I can understand where that scenario works, but the average person, if you have a loan on your home and it involves any kind of a mortgage lien, they force place insurance on you. So I'm not understanding what I'm hearing at all, because I know that is something that happens, but I understand how it happened in Hawaii, because they said these homes really aren't that expensive and the construction was very poor, and they've lived there for hundreds of years and they just passed it down from generation to generation and it didn't matter. But those homes in California are really expensive.
Well, even the ones like in Pacific Palisades, they're right on the ocean. They're beautiful spots, for God's sake. But what if you're not, I mean, Dan, you know, if any of us had a family, if we have to go somewhere else for 7 years, where the hell do we go for 7 years? Then waiting to move back? I mean, it's kind of a whole lifetime somewhere else, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't understand. I honestly, and truthfully, Tom, I've been struggling with how this thing works, and I have asked a lot of questions, and I'm not getting any answers that make any sense. They just say people can't afford it.
Yeah, well,
afford the insurance. So where are they going to go now? How can they afford to be homeless now?
Well, I mean, I say if you can't, that's the question I'm asking here. Is if the only economic solution is you get out of the place and you find somebody who will give you a price that they can afford cash, where they don't have to get a mortgage, and oh, by the way, they're not going to insure it. I mean, can you think of, I'm surely on record, if I won't, I'm going, I hope it doesn't come to that. But isn't that the bottom, John, basically?
I think, you know, if I were in the shoes of these people, I'd be hesitant to attempt to rebuild on the same lot that I own. And I couldn't afford to rebuild anything like what I had, even if it weren't a particularly important or big house, not given what else is being built around there. I think you'll see conglomerates come in and consolidate ownership. They'll clean up. They'll buy property that, you know, they can develop. They'll give people the value of their land, and maybe there'll be something else thrown in as an incentive to sweeten the pot, and you will have the construction of multifamily dwellings that really have always been an asset about California. This is what distinguishes it from other places, you know, where there's attractive residential neighborhoods. You know, people expect to have this freestanding house and a pool and a view and everything else. And I don't think that they can afford to have that again in this part of the world. So you'll have BlackRock, which can self-insure, and other places, other outfits like that, rebuilding this and rethinking the kind of, you know, condominiumized, you know, owner that's going to live in an apartment, or better yet, just rent it. I don't think you're going to see, you know, single family ownership return to this neighborhood in the Pacific Palisades. Certainly not.
But I'm saying, John, to me, that's why I'm asking you guys for the people response, because it's pretty clear, unfortunately, in my economic trading mind, that you and Nancy have a house. The thing gets burned to the ground. You're insured for $400,000. Insurance company someday somewhere writes you a check for $400,000. You look at the architect and they go, "Well, that's interesting. The new codes to put your place back together is now $600,000. And oh, by the way, your insurance is going to be $10,000. And you guys go, "Well, that doesn't work." Now you've got your check, and somebody comes by and says, "How about I buy the property from you from $75,000 and go and don't ever come back?" And you're going to go, "Okay, then." You know, right? I mean, what
you
else?
You got to remember something. If there's a mortgage, the check doesn't get made out to you. It gets made out to you in the bank. So
well,
the
that's
bank
what I'm saying. If you have anything positive, you can probably walk. I mean, if the check is for $400,000 and your mortgage is $350,000, then you're right. 50 is yours, right?
50 would be yours, and you'd have to decide if you want to walk. But I don't know. You would have to walk because you're not going to be able to afford to live in that area anymore. I mean, it's not going to happen.
Right.
I mean, what Bill was talking about.
There's a news story the other day. Brandon Johnson unveiled, you know, a prototype of affordable housing that could be built in, you know, benighted neighborhoods in Chicago. And, you know, on the outside, these look like what I guess you could call affordable housing, but they still cost $700,000 to build. This is what it costs to build affordable housing. So if somebody lived in Pacific Palisades, it's not going to settle for one of these houses, even though it costs $700,000 here. Imagine what it would cost in California to build a second-rate house these days. It won't be anything like what you had. It won't be anything you can afford. So I think you'll have to walk. There's no point in staying.
Well, the example Bill used, did you ever see Homestead before it went down?
No.
I won't say the unbridled pleasure, but my aunt, someday when you guys are over, Ted, you might have met her. She could have been one of the strangest, nicest, but the strangest people I've ever met, my aunt. Anyway, she was kind of a, she was out there, but everybody loved her. Her father, who worked God knows what in the steel mill someplace in Mahammond, Indiana, so he moves down to Homestead. And it was your very low-end, I won't even say middle class. The houses are basically plywood. And, you know, you drive down the block and everybody had a washing machine.
I know what you're saying.
If the three of us went up and leaned on one of these places, it could go down. You know, it was, you know, you had maybe one or two window air conditioners. You were in Florida, but you wouldn't have, I don't know, I'd just say we would not have been happy living there. And so all of a sudden this hurricane comes through and everything's down. I mean, it's wiped. The only thing left are the five washing machines and the old cars that we had in the driveway. And I mean, it was that bad. So now all of a sudden you go, okay, well, here's your check for, like, not much. Oh, by the way, we got all these new building codes, so even to put up a place with the same square footage is going to cost you, you know, $180 or $200 back in the day. And the guy goes, "What do you mean? My place costs like $30, and that's what I'm insured for." I mean, I don't know where all those people went. I mean, they never went back there. I mean, there's no way they could afford it. I don't know if they all ended up in, you know, government housing someplace. Maybe I think we're maybe not as bad, but it's sort of the same deal going, don't you think?
It is. It's very crazy.
How long can you be out of your house? You can't just stay in a motel room for 11 years, can you?
No, you can't. Have so much, and that's it. I mean, there's a limit on everything in these policies that, you know, you don't really know what you have in insurance until you go to use it.
Well, until you get the check.
And it applies to you. And then you find out what you thought you had and what you actually have could be two different things. And I just don't see the Pacific Palisades getting totally rebuilt. I mean, maybe the rich, you know, the rich and famous.
Well, the ones in the canyons. The ones in the canyons, you got to wonder if you want to.
Well, I agree with you, but especially when you realize that if they shut off the electricity, which they did, because they said that that was sparking fires, if the lines would go down and then the pumps don't work, what are you doing?
Yeah, it's a. So how many years in a motel would you guys have to be before you got tired of putting the quarter in the massager?
I'm a quarter in the washing machine, right?
Yeah, right. Who's got a quarter? You're talking $10.
Yeah,
probably.
So, yeah.
$5 bills.
So yeah. one of my buddies said he was in Jackson. Well, Carl said he went to Jackson. Weren't they going hiking up there or something, Jen? And he said they take credit cards on the washing machines in the laundromat.
Yeah.
I never. I tell you what, I must be getting old. I never thought I'd see that day, but evidently
the laundromat doesn't put air in it anymore.
No.
What you saying, Jen?
When I put air in a tire recently, I had a rental car and one of the tires was losing pressure, so I took it into the local gas station and put air in the tire. I had to use a debit card.
Oh my God!
You got to be kidding me. It's not funny, but
they wanted like 8 quarters or something. I didn't have 2 quarters, but they had a reader for a card. So I bought air with my debit card.
I gotta ask.
That was an education.
I gotta ask you guys something. I have a roll of Susan B. Anthony silver dollars. What do I do with those things?
Well, spend them.
I mean, I got them because they were the only coin that the parking meters took. So I went in the bank, and they actually sold. There's 20 of them in there, so it's $20. So then Matty Weber says, he goes, just get the parking app. You don't ever want to put your credit card in one of those things, and you probably, why shove all the quarters in there? So that's the only app I have is a parking meter app, because he goes, they're all stealing everybody's credit card things. So, anywho. Well, thank you, guys. Nancy, are you off to Florida or something pretty soon?
Yes, I'm not going to be here the next 2 weeks, guys.
All right, well, I'll do two, then.
Oh,
then you
great.
Can do two.
Have a good time.
Have a good time.
Yeah,
the weather's supposed to be nice, so be good, John.
Yeah,
thank you.
I hope I don't see any snow down there.
No, those guys, I'd love the idea of the snow on Bourbon Street. I thought that was kind of cool in New Orleans. What if they have snow for the Super Bowl? That'll be cool if they have.
Yeah.
God. Anyway, thank you, guys. We'll ferret this out tomorrow, and we'll see what happens. Hopefully the market will come back here a little bit. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
I did not know that.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
That's all, folks.